Ira Steingold representing Mr. Paul Jackson. Nice to see everybody. March 28th.
Do you care to reserve any time?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I'll reserve 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
March 28, 2011, Mr. Jackson was at the port in Portsmouth on the waterfront driving a forklift, ran over Mrs. Bellamy, and Mrs. Bellamy died. It's a very horrific accident. Body was mangled, was burned. There was blood everywhere. There's a possibility that Mrs. Bellamy still survived. Rescue efforts were engaged, and of course, Mrs. Bellamy was pronounced dead shortly thereafter. Bones, I think, were broken. Unusual body turns relative to the injury. And so Mr. Jackson was diagnosed with PTSD, and of course we have all the medical records relative to that.
As I recall, there was a question raised at some point as to whether there really was a diagnosis of PTSD.
Well, thank you, Judge. I guess somebody may have questioned that, mostly counsel on the other side, but the evidence is so overwhelming that there is PTSD.
Was there an express diagnosis by a medical provider?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. A couple of them. Actually, in fact, one of the independent medical examiners, Dr. Thrasher, actually made the diagnosis as well. So I think it was pretty convincing. Dr. Mansheim made some arguments that maybe it was not PTSD, but I don't have a medical license anymore. No, never had it. But in any event, I think that it's seemed to be pretty clear anyway that the bulk of the medical opinions were in favor of PTSD. Now, what happens is my argument is that the full commission sort of does not get the benefit of this court's wonderful opinion that came down on September 9, 2014. It's United Parcel Service versus Kirk Prince. And so what ends up happening is the full commission, it gets this unusual idea that because Mr. Jackson didn't really see or didn't really know that he had run over Mrs. Bellamy immediately, and it was only seconds later that actually he realizes it, that somehow or the other Mr. Jackson ends up being a bystander. There's really no law regarding the bystander idea, but then, of course, this court, in this wonderful opinion of September 9, 2014, determines that even a person who is a bystander actually has finds that the PTSD is compensable. What happened in the Prince case, which came down, as I say, 90 days ago, which, by the way, the full commission did not really have the benefit of that opinion, because the opinion of the full commission came down in June of 2014. But in any event, back to the Prince case, what ends up happening is this UPS driver comes upon the scene. He's delivering, I guess, packages to this nice lady's house, sees there's been some violence and the
gruesome murder.
Gruesome. And at the time, what ends up happening is that Mr. Prince immediately calls 911, only sees the face for a few seconds, begins to later on vomit, etc. I mean, it's just got to be an awful situation. In the meantime, he does not go into the house. He doesn't go around the side of the house. He just calls 911, and apparently, in the opinion, it talks about him backing off. He just most likely goes back to the road or back to his truck, awaiting the authorities to appear. And so, you know, if anybody's a bystander, he's a bystander. He had nothing to do with it. He's there. There's a little bit of this issue, was he in fear of his life? And maybe that's part of the fright side. I think that's really de minimis.
Help me with the standard, though. I read
yes, sir.
Shock or fright in the disjunctive, and then see it applied as shock and fright in the conjunctive.
Yeah, I think that it really is the disjunctive, that it is it's shock or fright. That's my opinion. And I think even in the opinion by the Court of Appeals here, September 9, 2014. I don't think that they determined that it is conjunctive, that it's still disjunctive. That there's a little bit of I'm going to call it dicta, maybe, that talks about the gentleman, Mr. Prince, thought there might have been a murder, so he was frightened. But I would say we all have some pretty good common sense that if we're at a murder scene, and you know, I've been practicing law, you guys practice law for a million years, and so we deal with all kinds of crimes, etc. So I don't think we have PTSD merely by being at a murder scene. So I think the PTSD in Mr. Prince's case came 100% from the gruesome nature of the injury. Now, we are kind of lucky, Judge Huff, as you've indicated, whether it's conjunctive or disjunctive. We have this, I think, the best case ever from the Supreme Court of Virginia. I'm a little biased, but I put it on par with Baker versus Carr out of the United States Supreme Court. And I do a lot of workers' comp work on the claimant side, so I find Burlington Mills versus Haygood the best case ever written by the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Well, and counsel, that case has been followed by several of our cases, and right. The language is pretty clear. It says physical injury or.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Right.
And so we don't really need to.
Oh,
belabor that point.
I thought you were going to suggest that we should be getting credit, too.
That's right. That's
well,
right.
Well,
Ted, there's a long line of cases that apply the Supreme Court test.
Yes, ma'am, and we're all in agreement that you really don't need a physical injury. So in the case, in order to have PTSD. So in Mr. Jackson's situation, obviously, he's on the forklift. He actually is the direct cause of the injury, and within seconds he realizes what's happened. This forklift, by the way, is very, very hot underneath, so it's just an awful, gruesome scene. You have the you see the record, and there's just a lot going on. So for him to be considered a bystander, we think is really not preposterous, but we think that for whatever reason the full commission below was stretching some things. I think my personal opinion is at this time you had longshore and harbor workers and the state workers' compensation being combined, and then in July of 2012 it was separated, so now we no longer have the
that shed some light. I was curious, figured it was not really an issue, but
yes, sir, and I think that may have been going a little bit through the mind of the full commission at this point, but you know they can do what they want, obviously, but I think that affected it because we just don't seem to have any anti-bystander language. Once again, we have Prince being the classic, it seems to me, as classic as you can get of a bystander being awarded compensation.
But back counsel, to can I just jump you ahead a little bit and say, even if we assume that the claimant suffered a compensable injury, wouldn't the employer's defense of violation of the known safety rule or the rejection of the panel of physicians apply?
Well, I'm going to say no at this point. That is, neither the full commission nor the deputy down in Virginia Beach dealt with those issues. Those issues have not yet been litigated.
So in that case, if we were to go the way you're suggesting, the best you can look for is a remand.
Remand.
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's, we would agree with that. That we take the position that although we argue those matters, they were not dealt with in the opinions, and this sole issue of being a bystander was dealt with. Going back to Haygood, it's really pretty cool. This is 1941 when they decide the case. This nice lady is working in a factory in 1939, I believe. She sees a flash of light 15 feet away. She falls into the arms of some co-worker and shortly thereafter develops PTSD. She's not injured by the light, and as Judge Decker has indicated before, you don't need a physical injury for that, and that's really what Haygood stands for. But I really think that the language is just fabulous, what Judge Spratley wrote. I'm going to quote if that's okay, that way at least I get to tell my people I was able to quote the Supreme Court.
Should be good for something.
Yes, sir. Thank you. We are fully aware that in tort actions, we have followed the common law rule that there can be no recovery for mental anguish unaccompanied by physical injury, and of the reasons for the rule. The rules of the common law for tort actions, however, do not apply to cases under the Workers' Compensation Act. Under the Workers' Compensation Act, the proceeding is not one for damage for a wrong done, but to obtain compensation for a loss sustained by reason of disability. The Compensation Act is intended to be remedial and must be liberally construed in favor of the employee. So that's why I really think it's a great case. And I think that, well, I don't think so. That has been the law most likely prior to and subsequent thereto. And so when you read all these cases, clearly everybody follows the law. So in this particular instance, we also take the position that puts it in an even better position than the Prince case. In the Prince case, when Mr. Prince, the UPS driver, came upon the unfortunate situation, we don't know if that lady had been dead for 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days. But in the Jackson case, this Mrs. Bellamy ends up dying, unfortunately, but dies right in front of Mr. Jackson, who is the direct cause of this injury. And so once again, following the Supreme Court case, they talk about if you have a disability, the purpose of the Workers' Compensation Commission statutes are to compensate you for the disability, not to deal with any wrongs. Now, obviously, we can deal with violation of a statute, et cetera, or violation of a known safety rule at a later date.
Counsel, let me ask you on that note. So if we were to remand it, would the commission then have to make a determination on PTSD?
Judge Decker, I believe no. I believe that PTSD has been determined. Of course, it's de novo, et cetera, but they appear to be very clear, both the deputy and the full commission, that the gentleman had PTSD.
So even on remand, that would be an issue already resolved?
I take that position, yes, ma'am.
Do you have any authority for that?
Well, I don't. So, but I just think it's so overwhelming.
Alrighty then.
I just think it's so overwhelming that and Dr. Mansheim is a very nice man, but anyway, as you read Dr. Mansheim's letters, et cetera, there's just this, he's just so far off base. I think it's almost incredible what he wrote. Let's see here.
You're in your rebuttal time,
just
so you're aware.
Okay, then I'm done.
All right, very well. Mr. Postal?
Good morning, Your Honors. Larry Postal for Seniors Marine Terminals. So, I may jump around a little bit, but to answer on Dr. Mansheim, the commission didn't actually address and make a finding on PTSD. Dr. Mansheim was actually not even our doctor. He was appointed by the U.S. Department of Labor. So somebody might well want to believe what he has to say. And as Ms. Ira kindly admitted, it would have to be remanded on the other issues, except I think you actually make a finding that there's no way you could find it wasn't a safety violation. The only person who thought it wasn't a safety violation was the claimant, who at first said he didn't know the rule, and then when confronted with the written statement said, okay, I know the rule, but this wasn't a violation.
But you suggesting that we should make that determination?
Well, I think you can make a finding that no fact finder could find otherwise when it's a written rule. I know it's a stretch, but it's a written rule. The union president, I've never had a union witness testify in favor of an employer, except for this case. And he said, yeah, hey, everybody knows this rule. It's a violation of the rule. That's what caused the accident.
Yeah. Well, don't spend too much time on that argument.
I understand. Okay, so fair enough. But so let's go to the main issue is whether you can have a psychological claim based on being a mere bystander, that is, no physical injury, no threat of physical injury. Absolutely none of these cases ever by this court, the Supreme Court, have ever held, including Prince, that they allowed a claim when there wasn't a threat of physical injury. Prince, they cite right in the decision, the guy thought the murderer might still be there. He feared for his life.
But
that's a threat.
But even in those cases, though, don't they cite the standard as an either-or, fright
well,
or
sure,
sharp?
Sure, it's fright of physical injury. It's not just fright of anything. Because the trouble is, if you say it's just fright, when you, to me, fright is, his only fright could be has to be a physical injury. He wasn't actually let's go back. I'm sorry. Basically, this is his only claim is I was really depressed because I killed somebody. There was no claim of he was frightened, that he was fearful of himself.
He was in shock, but not in fright.
I don't think he was in shock. He was just depressed. I killed somebody. And I understand why he was. There was no evidence that he was in shock. In fact, for the first month, no one ever diagnosed PTSD. And it was sort of like, okay, I'm really depressed. I feel bad because I felt something. That was Dr. Stiles. So I don't think there was any shock. I don't think there was any fright. And I think when the courts talk about shock and fright, they're talking about frightening of being hurt. And I think the reason why they draw that line is because if you don't draw that line, then you're just opening the Pandora's box. You could have 200 longshoremen saw this lady sitting on the ground, mangled.
But, counsel, doesn't it make a difference that in this, I mean, we'll go back to the test in a minute.
Yeah.
But doesn't it make a difference in this case that the employee was not only the cause of the injury to the victim, but also engaged in the rescue effort and was not a trained rescuer?
Well, he wasn't really engaged in the rescue.
Well, he helped
not
others.
Basically, well, they removed her from the forklift. I mean, from under the forklift.
Well, that's pretty traumatic to take somebody with serious injuries and get them out from under a forklift.
I don't think there was a whole lot of testimony that he did that, but rather others did. I think that somebody else came with a forklift, had to lift up the forklift and then get her out from under there. But I will say, I agree, there is a difference between the person who watched it to the person who called.
That's
your point.
The main.
But then, you know, Virginia's a really strange state in that, I mean, I do workers' comp elsewhere, federal. Nobody has but it's unusual to have a standard of injury by accident. Most states, it's, hey, if you cause it at work, it's compensable. But that's not Virginia. Virginia is injury by accident. And it almost, I mean, blows my mind to say, how is it an injury by accident that I run somebody else over and kill them? It's an accident to the person I killed, but it really stretches the English language to say that's an injury by accident to me.
But that's not an issue on appeal before us, is it?
Well, I think it is in the definite, because the question is whether this is a compensable injury by accident. So then the question is, what is the definition of injury by accident? And then that gets us to, okay, is it enough? And in fact, if you look at this court's decision in Owens, he can't prevail. Because in Owens, there clearly was a shock. The manhole cover dropped. I'm sure the guy jumped up 10 feet in the air from the noise. And this court said, yeah, I'm sure he was shocked, et cetera, but that's not an injury by accident. So I think there would be no question, if you find that merely witnessing it, you go way beyond anything else. But also, there's never been a case yet where there wasn't some risk of physical injury. And so the question becomes, can you really have an injury by accident when you weren't injured nor had a threat of an injury? Physical injury. And I guess there's two questions. One is, does it really fit the language? And then two, there's sort of a policy issue of, do we really want to open up that door to say that, you know, if you kill somebody, we're going to give you compensation?
Well, the injury, though, was a psychological injury, and since Burlington, a psychological injury is considered an injury.
If, in fact, there was some physical injury to you, or, I mean, none of the cases have ever had it where there wasn't a threat of a physical injury.
Isn't that the old tort standard that you're talking about, though, for psychological injuries, that there has to be a physical contact or a physical manifestation in order to recover for shock? But it's a different standard in the workers' comp.
I don't think it is. If you look at every case, I mean...
Well, counsel, some of these cases, and I'm very, very familiar with UPS, mm-hmm. and some of these cases, the facts actually did show that the person was concerned for harm, and so that may appear in the opinion as dicta or as part of the facts. But where is the case that requires some sort of risk of harm when you have that psychological injury?
Well, I think Owens comes close to that, but I will admit to you, there's no case that says point blank you have to have physical injury.
And in fact, the test, explained by all the cases, is causally related to an obvious sudden shock or fright, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree that's the wording. So there's really two questions. One is it important that all the facts always had some physical injury? And I guess you could say, well, that's just a coincidence. But then you also get to the issue, well, are they saying shock? Well, clearly it's not fright, because he didn't have any. He wasn't frightened. So then you're left with, what's the shock of? And I guess, first of all, if shock really meant sort of common, I just was, you know, I jumped or something, then you wouldn't have the Owens case. Because Owens, clearly the person was shocked. The manhole cover dropped right below him. So I think, and I guess what my argument is, that shock or fright refers to the fact you have to have some risk of physical injury, and if your only shock is, I'm depressed, I killed somebody, that's not the kind of shock that the court was referring to. But obviously you'll tell us in a few weeks. but again, I think if you look at just... I will go back. The statute does say injury by accident. And... it's really a stretch to say that I was shocked by seeing that I killed somebody to say that's an injury by accident. I think Owens would have a hard time fitting in a standard that basically just being upset is shock that would fall within the standard. But I will admit there's no case right on point that says that you have to have a physical injury.
And counsel, so if we were to remand this, what would be your position on the remand?
Well, my position would be that he doesn't have PTSD, because Dr. Manshine was right. My first position would be violating the safety rule. So I got to say, I was a little surprised the commission just didn't take what I thought was the easiest way out. But here we are. So my first argument would be, look, the almost overwhelming evidence was he violated the safety rule. That was the cause of the accident. We're done under 65.2306. Alternatively, we offered him a panel as soon as we knew that he wanted medical care. He rejected it. And then lastly would be the PTSD. Sort of be my order of preference, if you will. But, I mean, I realize... may not be a big selling point, but to me it was so obvious, why make a remand?
Well, your point would be that on remand the commission would have to look at all of these things. Or
Yes. Correct.
That all those things could potentially be on the table.
Exactly. And I think that is the one thing we both agree with, the commission really didn't address any of those.
Well, in the Joint Appendix 696, I'm wrestling with whether or not the commission made a finding with respect to a diagnosis of PTSD. And on Joint Appendix 696, the commission writes, even if he had made such a finding, the fact that the claimant met the diagnostic criteria for PTSD does not satisfy his burden of proving compensability. It sounds to me implicit that the commission is saying the diagnostic criteria for PTSD has been satisfied.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think they're saying even if he met it, okay. He doesn't win. To say that even if you met it, you don't win doesn't mean that we decided it. And in fact, I think at another place they indicated that he seemed to be depressed, but they weren't so sure it was PTSD.
Okay.
Counsel, I didn't want you to misunderstand what I stated earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm not acknowledging whether I agree with you or whether I disagree with you. You just want us to skip a step. And I don't think that we have the authority to do that. Yeah. So that's the issue. Yeah. And that's why I didn't want you to spend too much time going down that road, because even if we agree with counsel, we'd still have to send it back. And that finding, we believe that finding would have to be made by
the commission.
I think
the only exception would be is if you made the determination that no reasonable fact finder could find otherwise. And that would be my argument. But you're correct. But for that... But I would argue that no reasonable fact finder could, given that it was a union president, the Joint Safety Committee. But I also understand it might be easy to just say, look, you guys decide it.
Oh, we're not into this to be easy now.
That's too late.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to make it easier for me.
Exactly.
I'll admit to that. There are no more questions. I won't beat a dead horse.
Thank you very much, Mr. Postol. Mr. Steingold, I am curious, and I've gone back
as Mr. Postal has suggested, and it does look like the context of that finding by the commission. We have reviewed the dissent and note that although deputy commissioner found claimant, quote, suffers from emotional and psychological problems, he did not determine if the claimant suffered from PTSD. So wouldn't we have to, if we remand, even the PTSD issue would go back?
I think I disagree in this sense, that the evidence was overwhelming. The court, the deputy in its opinion, discussed the various physicians and Dr. Thrasher, et cetera. So I think what the deputy did, and then potentially I guess what the full commission did, was take the position, well, because he's a bystander, we don't even need to get to it. So that's what was throwing us off. If I could, thank you, Judge, if I could address just what Mr. Postel had said relative to shock, as Judge Decker was talking about. You have the Mottram case, which is Fairfax County Fire and Rescue versus Mottram, which is a Virginia Supreme Court, again, 263 Virginia 365, 2002. At that time, the Supreme Court ruled that Mr. Mottram was entitled to compensation for PTSD. Here's this fellow up in Fairfax County, us guys from Hampton Roads know to be from Fairfax County, you have to be smart, rich, etc. So this guy, Mottram, working for fire and rescue, and so you had to be a really sharp guy to get that job because a lot of competition. So after 10 years of being on the job, he just can't take it anymore, and the Supreme Court said you get PTSD. So you talk about shock, I guess, just seeing dead people all the time, etc. So shock, I don't think it's a relative term, but shock is, you see dead people, you see trauma, you see lots of bad things. That I believe, is shock.
Well, and it makes a difference, doesn't it, whether you're a first responder where you're expected to see that kind of thing, and if you're not a first responder, then it's shock in the context of the employment that you are involved in.
Yes, sir. And in addition, Mottram wins because even though he's in that line of business, they say you're entitled. And then one more thing, I think, under the safety rule, you have to prove whether it's enforced or not, and there was no testimony about that. There has to be more testimony. That is, we contended it was, not enforced. Even if you have a safety rule, it's not enforced, and none of that was brought or dealt with.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We'll come down and greet counsel, and thereafter we'll take up the case of Spotsylvania Department of Social Services.